when you go through eating disorder recovery, professionals try and help you kind of battle through that diet culture or that eating disorder, those rules that you've created and those restrictions, as well as then overcoming whatever's underlying it so that relapse and isn't as prominent and that full recovery is more possible for you. And so for me, yes, that's a perfect, the perfect answer for me is that perfectionism was kind of what led me to that.
Looking online and scrolling, there's a huge presence of people with perfect bodies and influencers selling flat stomach teas. And to avoid it would literally be a huge challenge and basically impossible. And so Alexis is an eating disorder survivor and speaker. She has spent literal months with a feeding tube down her stomach and has battled all the way through her mental health journey. Now she hopes to share her own story in order to help other people in the same position she used to be in before it's too late. She's a motivational speaker, coach, and fellow podcast host. And so welcome, Alexis.
Thank you. I'm super excited to be here.
I just want to know, who would you say that you are? Because I have my my mind made up of who you are, but who would you say that you are?
I mean, just to kind of introduce myself, I'm Lexi. I am currently a college student. I'm studying psychology. So just in my undergrad, I want to go into mental health counseling. Obviously, my whole eating disorder story is a whole other thing that we'll kind of get into in a minute, but I love to advocate for mental health. That's just really where my passion is. I've got three sisters. I am obsessed with fruit snacks, and I take way too many naps. That's one thing that my followers definitely know about me. But yeah, nothing too exciting. Just a college kid kind of following my dream of mental health counseling, trying to kind of bless the lives of some other individuals.
Right. I feel like mental health is one of those topics that's kind of the hot topic right now and in the years we are in. And it's one of those things that used to not be talked about, but now it's basically the topic to talk about. And it's great to see you and so many others doing and getting into the conversation of mental health. Because I mean, I'm not a huge person in the mental health space, and I don't want to be completely honest, but I find it really interesting, and it's really great that more people are finding it interesting and wanting to speak about it.
Yeah, I mean, everybody has their little niche, and so, I mean, mental health is definitely my passion. I wouldn't have gone into it if I wouldn't have gone through the struggles that I have, and so I'm kind of glad that this is where I've ended up and that this is my passion, and hopefully, I hope that mental health always stays a hot topic, because I think it is a really, really important one.
Definitely. And I'm glad you mentioned the things you've gone through, because before we get to what you have done and what you are doing, I want to know how you ended up there. So going back in time a lot, I want to understand your upbringing, because I always think that a person's upbringing definitely plays a huge part in who they are and how they define themselves. Sure. And so tell me a little bit, what was your living situation growing up?
I was in a very a traditional family life. I have three sisters, mom and dad. Everything was just very, I guess, typical in a family standpoint. Growing up, I was always very active in sports, in dance. I played soccer. I always did a bunch of extracurricular activities, and so I was like in a musical theater kind of acting group. I played piano, just everything that I really enjoyed I kind of did, and I was always fairly busy, as a lot of kids are, with school and extracurriculars and whatnot. But school always, I've always just kind of had a natural perfectionistic attitude, especially when it comes to education and academics. And so everything, even in like elementary school, I always did right on time, as perfectly as I can do it. Every instruction was followed. I was the perfect student. And growing up, I kind of just kept that with me through middle school, through high school. And I mean, even today, it's just kind of a part of who I am. But at one point it really started to get almost toxic and dysfunctional perfectionism. And so, I mean, now I'm at a point where I'm still a good student, but it's not overwhelming to my mental health. But growing up, I've always kind of had that kind of personality with me. I was always very active, and obviously that kind of led into some health obsessed orthorexia, anorexia based eating disorders that I am for sure, I can for sure jump into. But yeah, my childhood looked very, I guess, typical of a Utah kid.
Right.
And so just, you know, you go to school, you come home to your family, and everything just looked very, very typical.
Yeah, it sounds like you had those sort of, like you said, typical social circles, like activities in school and outside of school. It seems like you had a normal, healthy childhood, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
which I'm so blessed with.
Yeah, yeah, and I can't.
I mean, I don't take that for granted. So
definitely, I was gonna say the same. I've had a great upbringing too. I can't really complain about anything. But so you had these social circles. Would you say that you gained a lot of support from it as well? And not only speaking about like your actual struggles later on, but just in an average day sense.
Yeah, they've always, my friends and my family have always been super, super supportive of me, regardless of what my struggles have been, regardless of whether or not I'm going through something major, like whether or not I'm in need of their support. They're always kind of there, and they're always genuinely interested in my life. And my support system has always been such a great benefit. And I recognize those individuals that don't necessarily have the support system or the structure that I grew up with. And my heart kind of goes out to them, and I think of where they might be and the struggles that they might be going through. And so I think that incorporating all of those different types of individuals in different circumstances is important, especially when it comes to mental health, because everybody is just so different. And our mental health, we've got to give ourselves more compassion and more grace, cut our own selves some slack, and kind of set boundaries and the whole nine yards when it comes to mental health.
Yeah, for sure. And so everything was going great. You enjoyed your life, or I hope still enjoy your life. But at some point, something started to go wrong, as I understand, because you said you had kind of a perfectionist mindset and personality. I assume that's what is bringing you down this road of problems. Am I right in assuming that?
Yeah, so everybody's eating disorder, an eating disorder is kind of just a coping mechanism for something else that's typically occurring in your life. And so for me, that was perfectionism, and some depression on the side. Some people's are like, can include social anxiety. Some people's can include like childhood trauma, anything like that. But typically there's something underlying an eating disorder. And so when you go through eating disorder recovery, professionals try and help you, kind of battle through that diet culture or that eating disorder, those rules that you've created and those restrictions, as well as then overcoming whatever's underlying it so that relapse and isn't as prominent and that full recovery is more possible for you. And so for me, yes, that's a perfect, the perfect answer for me is that perfectionism was kind of what led me to that.
Right. And what was it about the perfectionism? Was it that you wanted to have that super fit body that you saw on Instagram or wherever, or in the magazines, or was it completely something else?
So for me, it was completely rational. It all started completely rational, and I just wanted to be healthy. And I think that the perfectionist mindset in me kind of wanted to be the perfect version of healthy, and I wanted to do that as perfectly as I could. And so I started just wanting to exercise more and eat healthier. That's all that it was. And it was completely rational, completely normal, you know, a perfectly healthy goal. And that started when I was about, let's see, 15, I think. And I think I was 14. But anyway, in my young teenage years, that started. And I just started to kind of spiral downhill, like you mentioned, and that perfectionistic mindset kind of took that under its wing and kind of continued that momentum. And so I started to track my calories, I started to restrict my eating, I started to exercise more, and just started to become malnourished, and my mindset was just completely irrational at a point. And so yeah, that perfectionism did drive kind of my eating disorder, but also that eating disorder served as a coping mechanism for that perfectionistic mindset, if that makes sense. And so, as well as some depression that I was battling at the time. And so everybody's eating disorder is obviously so different, but for me, it started out completely healthy. And a lot of people's do, it's more of a fitness type of thing. And that's what we call orthorexia, is when it's more of a nutrition mindset that just kind of becomes obsessive. And it's a thing that definitely is starting to spiral out of control in the world. And I think some individuals are making careers out of it, which is very toxic. And there's definitely, I mean, I'm definitely not anti-health or anti-exercise or anti-salads or whatever, but I just think that we just need a lot more caution around obsessive health and obsessive health culture.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, just looking at, actually, not my personal Instagram, because I guess my personal Instagram has been very fine-tuned to what I actually like, but the podcast page, the Instagram, like, the explore page is completely filled with like fitness, so-called fitness influencers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With like, oh, get this, get a six pack in 10 days, or buy this flat stomach tea, like I mentioned in the introduction, and you'll have the perfect body. Like, that's not how it works. And even if it would work like that, that's not something that you would want.
Right.
Because yes, sure, a six-pack might look really great, and if it's done correctly, yes, it will be good for your body as well. But to get a six-pack or whatever else, just to get that thing, that's not fitness, that's not health. That's something completely else. That's, in my opinion, something that's created from, I guess, some kind of social norm at this point.
And I think it's important to note that, like, obtaining your health can be something that you're into or something that you enjoy. Like, for me, I love exercise. I love yoga. It makes me feel good. It makes me sleep better. It gives me those, you know, that dopamine, and I absolutely adore it. But I think it all kind of comes back to your intention. If you're working towards weight loss, if you're working towards punishing yourself or your body in any way, shape, or form, that's definitely not what we want. And that's definitely not going to benefit you in the long run. And I think that, sure, we can normalize normal bodies all we want. And we can say, you know what, it's okay for people in bigger bodies. It's okay for us to have individuals in smaller bodies or taller bodies or whatever it may be. But when it really comes down to it, we're really honestly more than a body. And that's not what really matters in our lives. Sure, we can say, you know what, we are fat positive, we are body confident, you know, influencers, the whole nine yards. Or you can say it's normal to have stretch marks, it's normal to have cellulite, it's normal to have stomach rolls, whatever it may be. But in the end, that is normal. And I do appreciate that. But I think it's more important that we emphasize that we're so much more than anything that our body looks like, and that our bodies are instruments for our use. That kind of comes from individuals, their names are Lexi and Lindsay Kite, that I always refer to when it comes to body image. And so they kind of coined that phrase of our bodies are instruments, not ornaments. And I cannot get behind that more. And that kind of changed my whole body image perspective of, it doesn't really matter what my body looks like, but my body can do absolutely amazing things. And that's why I absolutely love my body for what it can do.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because personally, I mean, I've never really struggled with personal self-image in a physical sense. But at the same time, of course, I have the moments where I look in the mirror and I'm like, I look so fat. Like, what are you doing here, fat ass? But then I have those moments of, like you say, that I realize that, because I'm super into running, I always mention it in every episode, but I really, really enjoy running. And I know I can run a marathon without problem. I enjoy it. I do it a few times a year. And so then to look in the mirror and say that, oh, you're a fat ass, then that, even then it would be irrelevant because I know I can achieve these great things that so many people can't. Mm-hmm. And that's really where the, like you say, where the conversation needs to be instead of the stomach rolls or whatever it is. It needs to be about what can you actually do with your body. And right. That's where the conversation starts for me.
Right. And I think it's important. I like how you mentioned exercise and body shape. And I think it's important to note that we have kind of these two big movements in the mental health and the eating disorder community, and that's intuitive eating and health at every size. And those are kind of some of the big pushes. And so, and I adore both of those individuals that have kind of created these movements. And health at every size is so important. I know, like, kind of referring to another individual, because I've learned so much from my peers and my acquaintances on Instagram and everything. Her name is Meg Boggs, and she is coming out with a book called Fitness at every Size, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And I mean, just using her as an example, I personally am a very, I mean, obviously the listeners can't see me, but I'm a very typical teenage girl. I'm petite, I'm small, I'm white, I'm thin, I'm, you know, just I live with so much privilege, and I recognize that. And I think it's important to note that individuals like Meg are coming out with these things, and she is in a bigger body, and she knows that, and people tell her that all day long, that she's in a bigger body. But I will tell you what, she can lift more weight than I ever will be able to lift in my life. And I mean, I can't tell you what that is. I don't know off the top of my head, but watching her, I'm amazed. And I'm amazed at what her body can do. And I'm amazed at what all of these other individuals can do. And for me, my body's flexible. My body's not super buff. I can't weight lift a ton of weight, but my body's flexible. Hmm. And I enjoy that. And I like pursuing that through yoga and Pilates and whatnot. And so when it comes to body image, it's all about what our bodies can do, and even just keeping ourselves alive. Our bodies are absolutely astounding, and they breathe for us. Our heart beats for us. We can walk, we can talk, we can move our hands, we can cook dinner, we can, you know, thinking about everything that our bodies can do. We can hold the hand of a loved one. We can, you know, cry on somebody's shoulder. We can walk, we can carry a kid on our back. We can, whatever it may be, our bodies are what is so, so important and so valuable.
For sure. And taking it back a little bit to the topic of influencers and fitness influencers, mm-hmm. You, when you were at the bottom, so to speak, I guess when you were at your worst, did you realize that you actually were at your worst at the time? Because I have a feeling that these influencers, and not, doesn't have to be in an influencer, but people that are struggling with eating disorders, do you think in your own experience that the person actually realizes it themselves, that they are having an eating disorder? Or do you think that they think that it's normal and it's just the way things are?
I totally think that they think it's normal, because I did. I thought it was healthy. I thought it was great. I thought I was doing everything I was supposed to do. And I was, according to what diet culture was telling me. I checked every box. I was drinking lots of water. I was counting my calories. I was figuring out my macros. I was exercising daily. I was doing this and this and this and this and this. And I did it perfectly, according to what diet culture wanted me to do. But it wasn't perfect for my health. Even though that's what I thought it was, it definitely was not. Because if it was perfect for my health, it wouldn't have landed me in a hospital bed,
right?
Or a feeding tube down my throat for exactly. 4 months. And so it's definitely not, was not what was best for my health, or my mental health. But at some point, I mean, it's not a choice either. With that being said, eating disorders aren't something that you choose. I didn't wake up in the morning and say, oh my gosh, no. It would be a really good idea if I started to restrict my intake and started to become malnourished and started to freeze my butt off everywhere I went because my body can't keep me warm anymore. It'd be a great idea if I shut down my reproductive system. It would be a great idea if my hair started to thin. Like, that sounds great. Mm. No, nobody wakes up and thinks that. You know what I mean? That's just ridiculous. And so it's just this slow, slow, slow process. And I think it's an illness is what it comes down to. It's a mental illness. And even though it is a mental illness, it's an illness just like any other. It's as if I was in the hospital just like the person next to me and I had the flu, I had mono, I had pneumonia, whatever it was, my body physiologically was just sick and I needed professional help in order to repair it. And that's fine. Therapy for my mind, for my eating disorder, was just like a physical therapist for somebody who has broken their arm or their leg or whatever it may be. And so an eating disorder is just an illness. I wanted to kind of put that disclaimer out there, and that there should be no shame in acknowledging it or creating awareness around it. But I do think that in the process of it, you don't understand what you're going through until those symptoms are so strong that you're consumed by thoughts of food, or that you have so much anxiety around your relationship with food or your body or just health in general. And I don't think that these individuals understand that they are creating that toxic space, especially because a lot of influencers are making it their lifestyle. They're making it their career and they're getting paid to do it. So why would they stop? And it's just feeding into the diet industry and making it even more of a billion-dollar industry. And it is even harder when so many people are giving them praise for it and saying, oh my gosh, congrats, you know, look at that before and after picture. That looks great. And don't understand that that's toxic to both our physical and mental health, as well as, I mean, social health and emotional health and just all around, it just is not beneficial to society in the long run.
Definitely. And how did you realize that you actually had a problem? Because I have a feeling that the people that are not realizing at this very moment and are listening to this, I think them hearing how you realized it could be of a lot of help. So how did you realize it?
Oh, for sure. I was a few months into this health journey, I guess, which in the eating disorder community is a short period of time. I did not experience an eating disorder for a very long period of time. I did experience a very severe case of an eating disorder, but a lot of individuals do struggle for a lot longer than I do. And I'm so grateful that it was caught early and that I was treated early so that I can have a fuller and faster recovery. And so I think it's important to kind of spread this awareness that you're talking about so that individuals can stop wherever that they're at, stop in their tracks and get the help that they need. And so for me, I knew I was struggling when I came home. It was a particular instance. I came home from, we ate dinner out and I had obviously tracked my calories and I had done a lot of research about what I wanted to get on the menu and whatnot. And I came home and then we had dinner and my parents called me up for dinner and they were like, Lexi, come eat, you know? And I was just crying on my bedroom floor because I had like maxed out my calories for the day. And I was like, I cannot put another piece of food in my body. Like that just ain't gonna happen. And that's the moment I realized they're not upset about this like I am.
Yeah.
Or the other people at the restaurant probably aren't upset about this right now like I am. And so for me, my first recovery breakthrough was before I was even diagnosed. And it's when I literally just said to myself, Lexi, you have a problem with food. And that sounded so stupid at the time. Like food, it's an inanimate thing that's just for our survival. And yet I had some wrong relationship with it. And so it was hard to come to terms with. And then I think when I started to question that, everything kind of fell into place. I realized, oh my goodness, that's why this is happening to my body. That's why I'm cold. That's why my hair is getting thinner. That's why my reproductive system has shut down. That's why I'm not feeling very much energy. This whole nine yards and everything kind of fell into place. So at some point I knew. It took me a little while to come to terms with it and understand, but at some point I did know. So hopefully listeners are at that point and they're aware of it and they're saying, okay, now I know. And then it comes to a question of, well, now what? Like, what am I going to do about it? What are you going to do? Just walk upstairs and say, hey, I just came to some realization that this is going on. Like, what do you do about it? And that's what I didn't understand. And so I just kept going because what else was I going to do? And I just kept going with this. And to listeners that are kind of in that situation, I say, please don't. Please do not continue doing what you're doing. Please understand that you're just sick and that you need professional help and that you need support and encouragement, just like anyone else with an illness. I mean, you wouldn't try and just cure some disease on your own. You would go receive treatment for it, as you should. And I think it's important to understand that. And if you just find any individual, I don't even care who, it can be your next door neighbor, it can be your roommate, it can be your grandma, doesn't matter. Somebody needs to know that you're struggling. And if you just tell them straight up, I don't know what the heck to do. I don't know where to turn. I don't know what to do. Do you have any ideas? Do you have any resources? Do you know anyone I could message or any physician I could contact? I mean, reach out to your doctors, reach out to me on Instagram, you know, somebody can help you find something that fits your needs, your financial needs, and your mental health needs. And so that's what's important, is to recognize and to take this time. I mean, if listeners are this far into the podcast, obviously they take just a second and think about if that's going on in your life. And if so, reach out and get some help for it.
Yeah. It's a difficult situation to like unpack, but were you afraid of criticism when you realized that you had a problem? Were you afraid that people would judge you if you said that I have this problem?
Yes, I was definitely fearful. I don't know if I would use the word criticism, because I don't think anyone in my social circle would have just come out and been like, well, that's ridiculous, or something like that. But I did fear being just judged, like unconsciously judged. And I honestly didn't receive a lot of judgment that I'm aware of. But yeah, I'm sure there are individuals, just because there's so much stigma around mental health and stigma around mental illness and eating disorders in particular, that some people were like, oh my gosh, she is so selfish. She is just, you know, so worldly, so superficial, and now she's sick, like she's made herself do this, blah blah blah, blah. I'm sure there's individuals that thought that, but yeah, I don't really care. I mean, that's what my mission is to kind of break down that stigma. But I didn't receive a lot of criticism directed at me, if that makes any sense. And I do remember sitting in the hospital, and obviously my parents knew, and I was at Primary Children's here in Salt Lake, and they took great care of me. But at the time, my mom, she was kind of calling individuals in our lives and just kind of updating them, being like, hey, I'm not going to be at work. I'm here with Lexi in the hospital. She's been diagnosed with anorexia. Or, you know, calling grandma and grandpa saying, hey, you know what, this is what's going on. Calling my piano teacher and saying, hey, you know what, this is what's going on. Different things like that. And I could hear her out in the hallway talking to people. And I just laid there in my bed with so much going on in my mind, thinking, okay, what in the world? I don't know where I'm going to end up. I don't know where this is going to go. I don't know how long this is going to take or what this is going to look like. But all I could do is just sit there and think, Mom, why don't we just put it on a billboard? It'd be easier. Like, it'd be easier if you just put it on a billboard and said, hi, we're in the hospital. Lexi has an eating disorder. Like, and that was so scary to me. And I think it's funny now, because now in my life I wear it on t-shirts.
Oh, really?
I mean, I have a t-shirt that says, I'm an eating disorder survivor. Help is available, or healing is possible, or something like that. And I wear shirts that say eating disorders don't discriminate, with all different types of body types. I wear shirts that say be kind to your mental health. I wear shirts that say therapy is cool. I wear shirts that say don't be a butthole to yourself. I literally all of those are in my closet. And so I think it's hilarious that I've come so far. But at the time, I did not want a soul to know. And eventually word just kind of kept going. And eventually I did kind of come out, I guess, and tell people what I was struggling with. And I mean, people obviously knew that I was struggling with something physiologically, because I did have a feeding tube, but I just kind of beat around the bush and didn't answer their question directly until I came to a point where I was ready. I knew that, you know, I that it was just my reality, and that so many other people were probably going through similar things. And as soon as I did mention what I was going through, I had so many individuals come to me and just start saying, oh my gosh, I've been through this. Mm. Or I know someone that's going through this. Or what have you done? Because I need a device because my friend is going through this. Mm. And the more I share my story, even today, the more I get that inspiration and I get those people that are saying, I'm going through this. I've been through this. And so I think that it's important to note that the more you share your story, the more people that understand and actually recognize and are so, so grateful for you being vulnerable with them. And so I think if you're questioning whether or not to share your story, now is probably a good time to start doing it.
Yeah, I'm really glad to hear that, because in my mind, I have a feeling that, you know, like if a person is diagnosed with cancer or any other like very serious disease that will affect you physically, and people will notice that you have some kind of serious disease, then anyone seeing it is obviously thinking in their own mind like, oh no, poor guy or girl, they have this thing and they're really struggling. But if you see a person struggling with either an anorexia or whatever else, then the mind, generally speaking, I think at least, goes towards, oh, why is the person so skinny? Like, why is she looking or he looking like that? But, and it touches on the point you said earlier, how it is actually a disease and not something that you wake up and choose to do. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, I feel like feeling very shitty right now. That's just the way I want to live. No one does that.
Right.
And still, most people, at least the way I think, see the person and goes, oh, why is she choosing to do that? But it's a problem, and I don't know how to tackle it. I don't know how we can get people to think of it as an actual disease and not as something you choose.
Yeah, I think that the number one thing that just comes to my mind is stigma. Stigma, stigma, stigma. And there is so much serenity. It's such taboo. And I felt that. I didn't want people to know because it was a taboo. Nobody talked about that. I didn't know anybody that had struggled like I had. And I didn't want to come out and just say, hey, guess what I'm struggling with? It's not something I was proud of. It's not something that I was, you know, excited about. And I think the more we have conversations about it, just like this one, the more we wear t-shirts that say it on the front of our, you know, on the front of our chest, that say eating disorders don't discriminate, or things like this. And the more we talk about it, the more we come to recognize that stigma, the more it breaks down, and the more diet culture can go die for all I care. And and I think it's important, just I think recognition is the key.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to do a ton. Mm-hmm. I don't think we need to create anything major. I just think we need to recognize, and diet culture needs to start taking down its crap, and individuals that are promoting it need to come to terms, and they need a good, I want to grab them by the shoulders and just shake them a little bit and say, oh my goodness, do you realize what you're doing? And they probably don't. And I honestly need to have more compassion towards them, I guess, is what, because I was one of those individuals, and I was promoting what they were promoting. And I just think the more awareness, the more people understand, the more people we have on our side, and the more people we have to fight against this stigma.
Yeah, and I think we're starting to see more of that. I think we're starting to see the opposite of diet culture. We're starting to see it's okay to have a bit of extra fat hanging off of your body, and it's okay to not work out 7 days a week, and it's okay to eat those candies that you've always wanted to eat, and you shouldn't feel bad about it. You should eat it, and you should feel good about it. It shouldn't be a problem. But a topic that I want to get into, because I have a lot of thoughts and strong thoughts on this, is like the body positivity movement, or the idea of body positivity, in the sense that it is okay to not be super fit, have perfect abs, have perfect biceps or ass or whatever it is. That's okay. And I think that's great because you don't need to live up to those ideals. Mm-hmm. However, when it starts to become a problem, in my opinion, is when it is when people start saying that it's okay to be morbidly obese and you're still beautiful. Yes, you're beautiful, but you're not healthy. And then you're at the opposite side of the spectrum compared to if you were anorexic, then you're I'm not aware of the word, what it's called when you're obese, but then you're on the other side of the spectrum. And that's, to me, that's a really big problem to me, because I'm a huge, I'm very much into staying healthy and staying fit in the sense that you should be able to do certain things with your body without feeling like you're about to die. You should be able to at least like walk fast a kilometer and not feel like you're about to die. And you should be able to lift certain weights without feeling like you're about to die. You should be able to do these things. But do you, I guess my question is, do you share these thoughts, or what's your take on the body positivity thing in general?
Yeah, so I think that I used to think the same way. I used to think that same way of like being morbidly obese so bad, like just associating it with being so bad. And I'm not going to completely disagree with what you're saying, because I think it's just a balance. And those individuals that maybe are struggling with something, not with, I don't want to say weight, because weight has, in my opinion, not a ton to do with health. And what I'm trying to say is that if someone is struggling with something physiological, such as they have really high blood pressure and that's affecting their health, like their heart, or that's affecting their, you know, if say they have some issue going on and it's affecting their lungs or something like that, then yeah, they should see a professional about that. But I don't think the number one priority should be weight loss. I don't think if someone, even if someone is quote unquote morbidly obese, and I don't love to use that term at all, but say they are experiencing something along those lines, the goal should not be weight loss. The goal should be, I want to be able to move my body so that I can go on a walk with my kids. I want to be able to, you know, eat foods and have my body actually feel good. I don't want my body to start feeling crummy or nauseous or whatever when you eat certain foods. And so those are totally perfect goals, totally great. But the intention should not be, I am so fat, I'm so obese, blah, blah, blah. I know I look great, I know I'm still beautiful, but I still just want to lose weight. That's not what I am about at all. Yeah, and I think it's important to note that this is something that's very, very important, is that there are individuals in bigger bodies. And when I say bigger bodies, I mean bigger bodies. Bigger bodies, not just big bodies, bigger bodies that are much healthier than individuals in thin bodies. Health is not correlated with what your body looks like. There is no optimum size. But I think it's important to note that your stress level, your exercise, how much you're exercising, how much you're moving. And it doesn't have to be, I mean, for you, you love running marathons. Great. So be it.
Yeah.
I personally do not, so I don't go run marathons. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be that. It can be, but it doesn't have to be. And it doesn't, you know, having a food freedom or a good relationship with food doesn't look like eating chocolate for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, or candies, or sweets, or TV dinners, or popcorn, or Pop-Tarts, whatever it may be. Sure, my body, I'm allowed to eat whatever I want to eat. I have unlimited permission for myself to eat foods, and whatever foods, and whenever. But intuitive eating is a lot more than just eating when I'm hungry and stopping when I'm full, and that's a whole nother topic that I would refer you to look into intuitive eating about. But I think my train of thought going back was that food freedom doesn't have to look like you're binging all the time, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
that's a completely other thing. And food freedom, it's an interesting concept, and there's so much misconception about it, because when you find food freedom through intuitive eating, you give yourself this permission to eat whatever, and there's no rules. That's the thing about it. No, intuitive eating, there are no rules. There's no rules about when you can eat. There's no rules about what you can eat. Anything along those lines, like, you name a rule, there's not one. And even some people now are starting to use intuitive eating as some type of diet, which it's not. Intuitive eating is anything but a diet. So if you're going to start using it in that term, find your own, coin your own phrase, like, honestly. But food freedom can look like just about anything. So for me, I can wake up in the morning and say, I want to have a donut for breakfast and a fruit snack and a yogurt. Great. And then for lunch, maybe I want a salad. Great. Maybe the next day for lunch, I want pizza. So be it. Mm. And it's just this big balance and this big game of variety and desire and let me think if I can say it right. Mm-hmm. Satiety? Is that how it's said?
I'm not sure. I've never heard the word, but I'm not English. English is not my native tongue, so.
Anyway, what sounds good? I'll say it like that. What sounds good, you know? And so that's important to note as well. And I think when it comes to health at every size, that there is so much more influence on your health than what you realize. And I'm definitely anti-scales. I don't care. I do not care one bit how much somebody weighs. I don't know how much myself weighs. I haven't weighed myself since I was diagnosed. And when I was diagnosed, I didn't get to know my weight. When I go to the doctor, I stand on the scale backwards so the doctor can know my weight, but I don't care. And I tell them, I don't want to know. I don't care about weight. I don't care how much my friends weigh. I don't care how much people at the gym weigh. I don't care. I simply don't care. And that's not what health is. That's not what confidence is. That's not what inclusivity is. That's not what health is. And so I think you are right. You're definitely right when it comes to the point of, you know, if you can't do what your body was made to do, if you don't have the range of motion, maybe that's a muscle problem or a bone problem or whatever it may be, you should get help for that. You should go see a doctor for that. If you're have a broken arm, you should go see a doctor for that. If you can't go on a walk like you want to go on a walk, you should go see a doctor for that. You should go see a physician about that. And I think sometimes these individuals in bigger bodies face so much discrimination, even in healthcare. And that's what we're trying to break down, is that when you show up to the doctor, they should not say, oh my goodness, you're struggling with infertility, you need to lose weight. BS. That's what I say. BS. They should not. And there still needs to be more recognition about that. And some physicians are so great, but others are just kind of swarmed with this diet culture that they've been taught. And I mean, it's really no fault of their own, but there just needs to be that education. Mm. And so I think it's important to note that for individuals in bigger bodies.
Yeah. Do you think, when you said it's BS, do you think that there's still some kind of connection between the size of your body in terms of fat and your health? Because I know you mentioned earlier there's little to no connection between the two, but in my opinion, I mean, really, I'm not the right person to speak about it because I don't really know much, but in my personal opinion, I definitely do think that there is a strong connection between your size in terms of fat and your health. It doesn't always need to be the root cause of your health problems, but it is definitely one of the reasons why you may be feeling a certain way. And sometimes it is that you're too fat, you're too skinny, you're too muscular, you're not enough muscular, or whatever it is, and your heart is weak, and your heart is strong, and basically what I'm trying to say is whatever it is, the size of your body definitely do matter, I think. So if I understand, or I guess I'll let you say for yourself, do you think that there is a connection between the two or almost none?
I honestly, I think I'm gonna have to agree to disagree with you on this one.
Yeah.
I don't think body size has much to do with health, if anything at all. And I think that there's so many factors that influence our health. And if weight is one of them, if body fat is one of them, it's definitely pretty dang low on the list. That there are so many other things that are going on in your bodies that are so much more important than the body fat percentage or BMI. We could get into BMI as well. BMI is ridiculous. It wasn't even created for individuals like it's used today. BMI wasn't even created by a professional, like a physician or somebody like that. It was created for other purposes. And
that I actually agree on. I've heard that one. Yeah.
And what, and BMI changes, like BMI will just change. Like, how does that even work? So overnight you can literally become overweight because the BMI scale changed. Like, what the heck? So BMI in itself is just a whole nine yards. But I think fat and weight, no, I don't think it has a lot to do with health. And given I am, like I said before, I do live with a lot of privilege. And if I was saying this and listeners were looking at me and I wasn't a bigger body, I would literally be waiting for the moment this podcast was published to receive the criticism. I would be waiting for it in my inbox because it would come. It would 100% come, and people would say, you don't know what you're talking about. You haven't done your research, blah, 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 blah. I've done my research. I've lived my life. I've been through experiences. I've read Intuitive Eating. I've read Health at Every Size. I've read dozens of articles and studies. I have the evidence to back it up. And if you'd like to know that, I'm happy to give you those resources.
Yeah,
it's just a problem about stigma is what it comes down to.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I want to say that too, that the point of me saying that I don't agree with you is definitely not to bash you or anything along the sorts. And also for the person listening or watching this, is that is not the point. So do not bash.
Right.
Like, calm down.
And I think sometimes I get so passionate about this, but no, I think I totally understand. We can have a diversity of opinions and that's what makes the world go round. And, and when we can kind of have these discussions of critical thinking, okay, is this important? Is this not important? That's where the benefit comes in, is that we can kind of dissect these issues and figure out what is up, what's going on, and how can we come to terms with it, and what can we do to be better humans. And so, I mean, having a diversity of opinions and having a diversity of experiences is very beneficial. So, I mean, definitely no shame in this. So
yeah, for sure. And I think that's also part of the reason why it's so difficult to make any kind of progress in this topic, because there's so many strong opinions on both sides. There's people like me sort of in the middle, and there's people on the other side and the other side, and there's very rarely an actual conversation happening. And when there is no conversation happening, there's no progress being made either.
Right.
And even then, if there would be no progress, at least you've had a conversation and you might maybe understand each other's point of view. You don't have to agree, but you understand each other. But I still want to, going back to the topic of the size of your body, let's make an example. I know, looking at the time, we're almost up, but if you take a really obese person, and that person is having problems with a person's heart, let's say, and then there's another person that is average looking, living a healthy life, eating good, exercising daily, keeping a healthy life, and that same person is also having struggles with his him or her heart, so they're both individuals are having the same kind of problem, but looking very different in terms of how they live and how they look. Would you still say that a doctor or any other individual saying that the obese person is more likely to have that problem because of the person's weight versus a doctor saying to that the average looking person that it's maybe genetic. I'm kind of lost in my own
No, I totally get what you're saying. And I think healthcare, most people would say that. If you come in and say someone in a bigger body comes in and says, you know what, my heart, or I mean, say they just go in for like an annual, you know, wellness check or whatever. And they say, you know, your heart is having abnormal rhythms or whatever. And a doctor is much more likely to say it's because of your weight if someone's in the bigger body. And if someone comes in a smaller body and they find the same thing, they're more likely to say, oh my gosh, let's run some tests, let's figure this out, let's do this. And that's what we need to start to change. And in my opinion, those people, if everything else was perfectly the same, say, I mean, they could have other things going on as well, but say everything else in their body was perfectly the same, everything else was perfectly healthy, and both of them had that same problem with their heart, one was in a smaller body, one was in a bigger body, they're equally as healthy. And I don't understand how anyone can argue against that, because they don't have any other problems going on, hypothetically. And so it's just their heart. And if their heart had the exact same problem, how else, why else would they be, why would they be differently healthy if they all had the same blood pressure, if they had the exact same blood pressure, they had the exact same, you know, breathing rate, they had the exact same abilities, why would one be healthier than the other? One of them just looks different. One of them just has different genetics. One of them has a different body structure and different bone structure. One of them, their cells are different. Some of them store fat more, some of them don't. I don't know what their life, what their experiences have been in life. I don't know what they've done. But in my opinion, and with the evidence that I found, those individuals would be equally as healthy.
Yeah. And I guess like you said, we'll agree to disagree.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that's okay. And listeners are probably sitting here going, what kind of a freaking podcast is this?
Exactly.
They're going, oh, well, crap, I received no... Like, I received, I guess maybe if they're looking for, like, where they stand on this topic, now they're like, well, what am I gonna do now? You know what I mean? And I think that's when you gotta dive in. That's when, for me, my experiences, my research in the field, my psychological studies, my peers and my my acquaintances on Instagram and these professionals, that's what I'm gonna stick with. And that's what I'm going to stick with for the rest of my life, because I know it and I believe it, and I've come to that. And say there's another individual that's halfway through their journey where I was. Yeah, I thought exactly as you do, and probably what they're thinking. I've been, like we were talking about that scale. Most people are on one end or the other. Some people, you said that you're kind of in the middle. I've been everywhere. I can promise you that. Obviously, I've been everywhere on that scale. Like, I've been in the hospital bed on the one end, sickly, diet culture infested, totally been there, totally on the other side over here. I mean, not anti-health, but just, I mean, I'm such a big advocate for mental health and for body inclusivity and body diversity and intuitive eating. And so I'm kind of on that other end, and I've been obviously through that whole process. And so, I mean, individuals can kind of find what works for them. And I mean, obviously I'm a little biased when I say, psst, I think this side is better, but I mean, it's about having conversations, and I'm so glad that we've been able to have this conversation, because it needs to be had.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the point of it. Like, opinions are subjective, and that's the end of it. Cause there's nothing more, or there's nothing else than opinions. That's all there is. And I have my opinion. You have your opinion. And there's a million other people that have their opinion.
Other opinions that we haven't even mentioned.
Exactly. That I probably disagree with, but that's fine. And that's the point of the podcast.
You know what I mean? We like to have these hard discussions, these difficult discussions, and to kind of break down, figure out, like I said before, what's going on. And so I'm, you know, that's what the podcast is all about, in my opinion.
For sure. And looking at the time, it's exactly 1 hour now, and on the dot.
I could talk for hours. I seriously.
Yeah, for sure. I could honestly keep on going for at least 3 more hours. But but thinking of the format that this is in, I don't think there's much people that would listen for 3 hours. So
probably not.
We may come back for another episode in the future, who knows? But for now, this is going to be the end. And like I said, we'll disagree to disagree. Agree to disagree. I have to say a huge thank you for having or being able to have this respectful conversation on the topic.
And thank you so much for having me. This is what I love to do. I could talk for days, and I do, honestly, over on my Instagram and through motivational speaking. And I mean, if people are more interested in my story, they can definitely check me out there and whatnot. So
yeah, for sure. Yeah, where can people connect with you?
So I have a couple different places. My Instagram was kind of the main hub of that. It's at everyounce.ofstrength on Instagram. You can also find my podcast on all major listening platforms, and that's called the Every Ounce Podcast. You can find my recovery workbook, which is called The Recovery Workbook, Your Guide to Eating Disorder and Mental Health Recovery on Amazon by Alexis Smith. You can visit my website, which is probably easier to go through my Instagram, honestly, which is, again, at everyounce.ofstrength. So that's kind of where the best places to find me.
Awesome. And I'll put all the links and everything in the description of wherever you're listening or watching this. And with that said, I'd say a huge thank you. And thank you.
Thank you.